Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Aegon conference call on Wednesday, 22nd January 2014. Throughout today's recorded presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. If any participant has difficulty hearing the presentation, please press the star followed by the zero on your telephone for operator assistance. I want to hand the conference over to Willem van den Berg, Head of Investor Relations. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Kirsten. Good morning, everyone. We appreciate that you have joined us for this call. Before we begin, I would like to remind you to take a moment to review our disclaimer on forward-looking statements, which is at the back of this presentation. We will update you on the progress we are making to execute our financial strategy, and I'd like to take the opportunity to provide further color on the announcements made this morning. Now, joining me this morning on the call is Daryl Button, our Chief Financial Officer. Also here are Karen Wright, our Treasurer, and Jurgen van Rossum, our Controller. As always, we welcome your questions after the presentation. We have invited both analysts and media for this call, but we will keep the Q&A session separate, and we'll start with the analyst. Daryl, please go ahead.
Thank you, Willem, and good morning, everyone. Last June, we presented our financial framework emphasizing our focus on profitable growth, implementing cost reductions, and addressing low-return businesses. I also indicated that we would conduct a review of our accounting policies for internal consistency, comparability with peers, and transparency. Today's presentation focuses on the results of that review. The outcome of the review is that as of the 1st of January 2014, we have implemented a new and uniform policy for deferred policy acquisition costs across the group. Furthermore, longevity reserves in the Netherlands will be based on prospective instead of observed mortality tables as of the beginning of 2014. As you know, we have committed to further improving the quality of our balance sheet, and we believe that with today's announcements, we are doing just that, making Aegon stronger. Calling the perpetual security will keep us on track to bring our leverage ratios within the company's target ranges and improves our financial flexibility. Slide 3 summarizes the accounting changes to be implemented in 2014. We will no longer be deferring indirect acquisition costs related to new sales or renewals. The estimated negative impact on shareholders' equity is 1.4 to 1.6 billion euros, as existing DAC balances will be adjusted retrospectively. The amended DAC accounting policy is consistent with the current proposals for IFRS 4 Phase 2 and more comparable to the policies of many of our peers. We anticipate that this measure will have a 50 million euros negative impact on underlying earnings in 2014. Indirect acquisition costs will be expensed directly and will no longer be capitalized, which more than offsets the benefit of lower amortization. We also decided to amend our accounting policy for longevity reserves in the Netherlands. As of 2014, Aegon will base its longevity reserves on prospective instead of observed mortality tables. The new methodology is consistent with that used in our solvency calculations and internal economic framework. As a result, we estimate a positive impact of 130 million euros on underlying earnings in 2014. The retrospective adoption of this change will decrease IFRS equity by 800 to 900 million euros. The announced accounting changes will have no impact on our cash flows, our local solvency metrics, or the group IGD ratio. Slide 4 shows the impact of the amended DAC accounting policy by geography. We expect to write down approximately 8% of DAC balances in the Americas, leading to a negative impact on shareholders' equity of between 525 and 625 million euros. In the UK, DAC will be lowered by almost one-third, decreasing equity by 900 million to 1 billion euros. The impact of the accounting changes outside the Americas and the UK is limited. We anticipate that the accounting changes will decrease underlying earnings by approximately 50 million euros in the near term. Growth of our business, for example, in variable annuities and certain life and health products in the US, leads to higher indirect costs, which will no longer be deferred. Over time, the earnings impact of these accounting changes will improve as reduced amortization expense increasingly compensates for the lower expense deferral. For example, under our new policy, underlying earnings will improve immediately whenever indirect acquisition costs are reduced. Turning to slide 5. We also decided to change our accounting policy for longevity reserves in the Netherlands. As of 2014, we will base longevity reserves on prospective instead of observed mortality tables. This is consistent with the current regulatory solvency regime, the future methodology to be applied under Solvency II, our internal economic framework and how we price for longevity risk, and importantly, the longevity instruments we placed into the capital markets that are accounted for at fair value under IFRS. Previously, we based our reserving on observed mortality tables and took incremental changes in life expectancy through the P&L as actual data emerged. This has led to a recurring reduction in earnings. By moving to prospective mortality tables, we anticipate future longevity improvements and strengthen existing reserves, thereby increasing underlying earnings in the Netherlands by approximately 130 million euros per annum. Any changes to our prospective longevity table in the future, whether positive or negative, will be recorded in the income statement on a fair value basis. As you can see on slide 6, we have reduced outstanding debt considerably over the last couple of years. Today, we announced the call of a $550 million U.S. dollar perpetual capital security. This capital instrument is included in our IGD capital base. Since 2011, gross leverage has been reduced by approximately 2 billion euros. In addition, we canceled the preferred shares held by the Aegon Association, thus eliminating the preferred dividend. Together, these actions have decreased annual fixed charges for the holding by approximately 200 million euros. Following the announced deleveraging and cancellation of the preferred shares, we are on track to be within our gross leverage and fixed charge cover ratio target ranges, as you can see on the graph on the left. The picture on the right shows how the reduction in fixed charges and holding operating expenses allows us to lower the excess capital floor level for the holding from 750 to approximately 600 million euros. We continue to maintain a prudent buffer over our floor level. This buffer is driven by the need for flexibility in a continuously uncertain regulatory and economic environment, liquidity needs, and our plans for dividends. As you know, our dividend policy is to pay a sustainable, and if the capital position and our operational free cash flows so allow, a growing dividend. Now let me conclude. With the measures announced today, we continue the execution of our financial strategy. Slide 7 summarizes the impact of today's announcements on several of our key metrics. While the overall impact is positive, the motivation throughout this process has always been to improve the consistency, comparability, and transparency of our business. The call of the perpetual capital security will reduce our leverage and improve our financial flexibility. We are able to do this because of our continued commitment to a strong balance sheet and capital position. The announced accounting changes will increase our return on equity. That said, we will keep our focus on profitable growth and implementing cost reductions to drive further ROE growth in the future. I would also like to reiterate the importance of portfolio optimization in our strategy. As we have discussed before, there are several businesses in the Aegon Group that are not meeting our return expectations. We have resources dedicated to addressing these issues, and we will keep you updated on our progress. Thank you for your attention. We will now open the floor for questions.
Thank you, sir. If any participant who is an analyst or investor would like to ask a question, please press the star followed by the 1 on your telephone. If you wish to cancel this request, please press the star followed by the 2. Your questions will be polled in the order they are received. There will be a short pause whilst participants register for a question. Thank you. Our first question comes from Farooq Hanif from Citigroup. Please go ahead with your question.
Thank you very much. Good morning. Just two questions. Firstly, when you look at that net positive 80 million underlying earnings impact that you've talked about today, there are obviously two components to it, and the DAC component going forward will probably change in a different way to the longevity component. I was wondering if you could talk about whether the 80 million is going to be roughly 80 million every year, or whether it might grow. If you could just talk about that briefly and whether that's a significant impact. And secondly, when you talk about prospective longevity tables, can you remind us which ones they are? So I know there are kind of industry tables. There are tables that, you know, you might be working on, and there might be, you know, increments to that. So could you just give us a sense of how conservative you think you're being? Thank you very much.
Yeah, hi, Farouk. It's Daryl. I'll take your first one, and I'll have Jürgen Van Rossum answer your second one. On the 80 million, as we look forward, yeah, the longevity, the 130 million, that is a step change to our run rates going forward. And obviously, we've given you the 2014 number. We have the most visibility on that, but I expect that to be sustainable into the future. On the 50 negative on the accounting changes, that will get better over time. It really is a function. At the end of the day, the DAC that we're taking off, the lower amortization costs will eventually offset and overtake the deferral, or the higher deferral or the lack of deferral expense that's coming through now. In addition to, as we continue to run our cost reduction programs and we focus on those indirect acquisition costs, as those come down, those will come directly through. So there's two factors that will actually improve the 50 over time as we go forward. And it's a little hard to give a specific trajectory on that, because it depends by product, by region, by acquisition cost strategy, if you will. But I would definitely look for the 50 to improve over time. On your second question, Jürgen?
Yeah, Aegon the Netherlands is using the Actuarial Society 2012-2062 table. Our table is based on the industry table.
And just sorry to ask that stupid question, but presumably, what kind of assumptions do they make for? I mean, do they assume continual longevity improvements going forward, or do they assume that those improvements tail off? I mean, can you give us a little bit more detail?
Yes, this table assumes a continued growth of life expectancy. That there is a short term and a long term element to it. That we saw a spike in longevity in 2011-2012 coming through our numbers. That's built into that curve.
I think, Farouk, it's important to understand it is an Aegon table at the end of the day. It's our best estimate table. Jürgen gave you the basis for forming that table, and it has the prospect of longevity improvements built into that, but we also adjust that table based on our own individual Aegon experience as well.
Okay, that's very, very candid of you. Thanks a lot.
Yep.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Ashik Musaddi from JP Morgan. Please go ahead with your question.
Yeah, hi, thank you, and good morning, everyone. A couple of questions. Can you give us some color on the recoverability test of UK and Canadian DAC? And secondly, in terms of your leverage ratio, your target is 26-30%. Now, are you happy at the 30% range, or would you want to go in between 26 or 30? How do you think about that? Would be interesting to know. Thank you.
Yeah, hi, Ashik. It's Daryl. In terms of the recoverability testing, that standard recoverability testing, and none of that changes in what we do with this accounting change. So the Canadian and the UK DAC was recoverable before this accounting change, and that's an important, I think, distinction to make here. This has not been a reduction in DAC balances based on a lack of recoverability. This has been a change in our deferral practices that have been implemented on a retrospective basis. So the DAC remains recoverable before and after with a coverage margin that's in there as well. On the 26 to 30, well, I think really the best thing I can say is we've been on a journey to reduce leverage, and I think we've been pretty clear about that. We have I have felt that our leverage position has been too high, and we've been undertaking a significant deleveraging program over the last 18 months or so. We're not done with that. We still plan on maturing out the $500 million senior maturity coming up in December of this year. That's also part of the plan. So this has been a journey that we've been on to reduce leverage. We expect to get down with inside of our 26 to 30% range by the end of the year. In terms of where we would like to operate, I think long term we'd like to obviously operate somewhere in the middle of the range to give us flexibility. That being said, we're operating around the high end of the range. I think that's comfortable now, particularly when you consider the significant improvement that we've made in our fixed charge cover. And I think that's important as well, and we certainly make those points when we talk with the rating agencies. So I think we're comfortable at the high end of the range. I've tried to lay out the cash development over the next several years. We actually have multiple priorities that we're going to try to achieve over that period. So for now, I think the high end of the range works for us.
That's very clear. Thanks, Daryl.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Albert Plo from ING. Please go ahead with your question.
Good morning, all. A few questions from my side. First, on the change in the floor for the holding net cash buffer to 600. You mentioned that you would like to keep an additional buffer also for liquidity and stability of dividend purposes. Can you give a bit more color there? Second question is, with Q1, there might still follow some more communication on, let's say, the hedging policies relating to the micro hedge and the equity collar hedge. Is that still planned maybe to address somewhat the P&L volatility going forward? And my final question, a bit more factual one, on the guidance for the DAC impairment balances. Can you maybe break that down between the UK, US, and Canada? Thank you.
Okay, Albert, let me try and take these in order. I think I might have ask Jürgen to take the third one. On the first one, on the floor and the buffer and how much, I don't have a specific answer for you. It's similar to what I've said in the past. We've tried to identify a hard floor of minimum excess capital that we want to retain in the holding. That loosely ties to 1.5 times cash flow. We think that if anything, 2008 showed us that we need to have a 1.5 years worth of cash flow at the holding at all time, and that's a floor that we don't want to pierce. That floor is going down from the 750 level to the 600, as we indicate in the slides. I think it's reasonable to assume that we're going to want to manage a buffer over and above that. It gives us flexibility and helps us secure dividend flexibility, allows us to be opportunistic, all of those things. So I think a reasonable floor over and above that 600 is still in our sight line. Obviously, it will fluctuate as we receive dividends periodically from our units into the holdco, and our holding expenses are not uniform throughout the year as well. Obviously, today we've announced the perpetual call, so that is a fluctuation on that balance as well. So I still look for us to maintain a reasonable, prudent buffer over and above that floor. On the macro hedge, I really think the best time to talk about the macro hedge will be in a few weeks when we bring out our Q4 results. I'll be able to discuss the year-end results and talk about our intention there. So I'm going to defer that one until February. On the third one, Jürgen?
Yes, Albert, on the changes in the DAC policy, America's is about 500 to 600 million. They're actually on slide 11.
Oh, sorry, apologies.
100 million of that is related to Canada. UK is about 900 to a billion, and that are the two meaningful amounts.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from William Hawkins from KBW. Please go ahead with your question.
Hello, morning. Thank you very much. First of all, Daryl, you did just make passing reference to your expectation you'll be at about 30% leverage ratio by the end of this year. Are you assuming in that further debt action like the one you've announced today, or is that purely based now on just operating experience, retained earnings and the rest of it? And then secondly, now that you've made this change to longevity, Should we be expecting any risk of volatility in the future for IFRS earnings, or are you now effectively perfectly matched between the way you're accounting for the swaps and the way you're accounting for longevity? I'm just wondering, you know, is this issue now off the table, or should we be aware of any, you know, risks for Dutch longevity in the future?
Yeah, two good questions, William. The short answer is that on the first question is that we should get there based on what we've already laid out. So in terms of the senior maturity that we've already talked about and the announcement here today, that should get us right around 30, if not a little below, by the end of the year. We will take a look at other we are going to take a look at other perpetuals just more, but more from a refinancing perspective, because we think that there is a market opportunity to reduce some costs, but there isn't I wouldn't say there's any hard plans in terms of doing anything more in terms of excess capital allocation towards deleveraging between now and the end of the year. Obviously we'll assess that as we go throughout the year. In terms of volatility of earnings, yeah, I'm glad you asked that question. The answer is yes. Now that we've gone to a fair value approach for prospective longevity tables in the Netherlands, if we change our view of prospective longevity in the future, that'll come through on a fair value basis, and that will be a little more volatile number than obviously than what we've seen in the past. What I would say is that now that we've gone to the prospective view, we've got all of our forward-looking views of how we think longevity will improve into the future, so there should be an equal probability that this would be a plus or a minus number when those tables, if those tables change. So it is something centered around zero. That being said, it is a fair value on a very long-tailed product, so it could come up, it could have more volatility than what we've seen in the past.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Marcus Rivaldi from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead with your question.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my questions. Two questions again about the debt side of things, I'm afraid. Look, clearly, obviously, it's good to see the deleveraging going on, but you've got a lot of senior debt in your debt stack that if you were to maybe do some sort of tender around that would reduce leverage but would have no solvency impact. I mean, have you thought about trying to do something about that? And then just to confirm, I think you were saying, again, you're looking at some of the higher coupon debt down the line for perhaps refinancing. Could you just could maybe give some more color about that, or whether you're looking, what currencies you might be looking at for that? Thank you very much.
Okay. Hi, Marcus. Karen Wright. On the deleveraging, as Gerald was pointing out, it has been, this has been more of a journey. And we have taken out actually quite a bit of senior debt. So we're also at a point where taking out some of the capital securities is comfortable to us. So yes, we are always looking at different alternatives as far as our senior debt, what's available for tender, what's available for make-whole. We're looking at our capital securities and what's currently callable also. So those are options that are all that have been looked at, and we continue to look at that. Right now, we're very comfortable with the plan that we've laid out and getting into our targets that we set out last June. As far as some of our capital securities, can you repeat the question again, the second question?
So I was just going to ask, have you thought about any particular currencies around that you would be targeting for refinancing those at all?
Yeah, it really is the same thing. We're going to look at which markets make the most sense at the time. So certainly we're looking at different currencies, but when we get to that point of looking at our ALM activity and we get closer to any kind of execution, we would certainly look at the best market to issue in. So it doesn't need to be specific to one currency or another.
Okay, thank you.
And I think I'm going to add just one thing onto what Karen said, just from a Solvency II lens as well. We are obviously we are trying to optimize our hybrid capital situation with from a perspective of Solvency II. A lot of more clarity has come to Solvency II here recently, and I expect actually we're in the so we've had level one clarity, and now we're working on level two implementing measures. So I hope over the next 6 months or so I'll have a much better view of how much hybrid capital we can support under the Solvency II Tier 1 rules. And that will also help us size the overall concentration of the hybrid relative to the senior.
So this is what you're saying is perhaps any further action might be a sort of a second half of the year type of activity for you.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. We're really doing a lot of work right now on the Solvency II, and I hope by summer we'll have a better sight line into some of those calculations, the Solvency II balance sheet, and then obviously as it relates into the capital structure, the amount of perpetual capital securities that we can support as Tier 1 capital. I'm reasonably confident that we had too much concentration where we were, which is why we've led to the call on the perpetual here today. Going forward, the mix of deleveraging between capital perpetuals and seniors will be at some level will be guided by what we can continue to support and optimize under Solvency II.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Francoise Boisson from Exane BNP Paribas. Please go ahead with your question.
Yes, thank you very much. Good morning, everybody. just one question remaining on my side. Does your new DAC balance reflect the change in economic assumptions that you took in Q3, namely lower rates and lower equity returns, or should we expect further negative impact in the future? Thank you.
No, it's a short answer. The answer is yes. Fully reflects all of the latest working assumptions that we made in Q3. Yep.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Gordon Etkin from RBC. Please go ahead with your question.
Yeah, morning. There's a couple of questions, please, on longevity. You've done two very large longevity swaps, very large, $12 billion in 2012 and $1.4 in 2013. So, the expectation would be that you'd hedge some of your longevity risk, and I seem to remember when you did the first one, you said that the Dutch business was now partially covered against future increases in longevity. So can you just talk us through how the longevity swaps work in practice and maybe what the charge would have been if you hadn't done the swaps? And the second question is, there's some people out there who would say future male longevity improves at 3 months per year, and this has been the case going back in time and it will be the case going forward. Can you just tell us how many months per year you're assuming now initially and how fast this tails off, please? Thanks.
Yeah, on the first one is easier than the second one. On the first one, we have the $12 billion first longevity swap that we did. That was an out of the money longevity swap. So in terms of providing tail protection, so it provided us a smaller coverage, if you will, in terms of overall reserves. And then of course we did the $1.4 billion, which was more of an at the money. Collectively together, those two transactions cover about 20% of our longevity risk in the Netherlands. It is a very good point to make, and I'll tie it into my comment earlier on the volatility on the earnings. The more hedging that we do, the less volatility that we'll have. And so the volatility that we will have in our earnings if and when we update a prospective mortality table would be on the 80% net exposure that we have, which is the gross less the hedging. So the more the hedging comes along, the less, obviously, the mark-to-market exposure that we'll have going forward. And I think that's an evolving story you'll hear from us as we continue to look at, and that's still our aspiration, is continue to look at bringing longevity protection into the capital markets. On the second question, I think we're just going to have to take that one offline I'll ask you to contact IR. We'll find a different forum to bring in terms of when we can better answer that question.
Just follow up on the first question. So if you did offload 20% of your longevity risk, how the investors who bought into those bonds, how are they impacted?
How are they impacted by our announcements here today?
Yeah.
They're not impacted at all. That's a complete separate and independent transaction that we've done with outside investors. So what we are doing today is aligning our accounting much more directly with the accounting that we'll have on those transactions that we've done. So effectively, and this gets into a lot of my consistency comments that I made earlier, we'll have now alignment in the way we treat our longevity book our gross longevity book with these hedging transactions so that we don't have an accounting mismatch. And that's one of the big rationales for making this change.
Okay. Thanks.
Yep.
Thank you. As a reminder, if you are an analyst or investor and would like to ask a question, please press the star followed by the one on your telephone. If you wish to cancel this request, please press the star followed by the two. Thank you. Okay. Our next question comes from William Erdekin from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Just one question. Will you be making any revisions to your group financial targets or divisional financial targets as a result of these accounting changes?
Yeah, well, I mean, the short answer to that is no. I did try to lay the groundwork for this when I laid out the financial strategy back in June. The biggest impact here, obviously, as it relates to the ROE, that's the biggest impact on these accounting changes. We maintain our ambition and target for 10 to 12% ROE. As I laid out in the fall, or back in June and through our discussions in the fall, our trajectory is lower than that. We were on a trajectory of 8 to 10, not 10 to 12. And I highlighted that, in fact, we would need to do additional management actions to move us from our trajectory to our target range, and that this accounting review would be one of those additional management actions. I've also highlighted the portfolio optimization review that's still ongoing as another one of those management actions. So this was contemplated in terms of trying to move us from our trajectory to our target range.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. If any participant from the media would like to ask a question, please press the star followed by the one on your telephone. If you wish to cancel this request, please press the star followed by the two. There will be a short pause while participants register for a question. Thank you. Our first question from the media comes from Archer van Riemsdyk from Dow Jones. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. A short follow-up on the last question. you mentioned this is part of the part of the actions taken to in order to improve the trajectory for the ROE target. Could you shortly summarize which are the other types of actions that are considered and the timeline for them?
Yeah, well, obviously the biggest and most important actions we have across the organization are continued focus and discipline on our new business and the profitability that we have in our new business. That is probably the single most important driver of the accreting ROE going forward, as well as our cost reduction programs that we have across all of our regions. Those are the organic things that are going on that we're working on every single day in terms of driving the ROE higher. These accounting changes were part of the step, as I mentioned before, but next to that would be a portfolio optimization review, and we're really looking at where the low-return businesses are that are reducing and dragging the ROE across the portfolio of Aegon companies and have various action plans to deal with those.
All right, thank you. And when would this review be finished?
Well, the portfolio review, of course, is never finished. I think it's always ongoing as part of our annual and repeating strategy work that we do. But we are taking a more concentrated look at a few of our low-returning businesses, and that's something we're going to do through the course of 2014.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. We have no further questions from the media. Please continue with any further points you wish to raise.
All right. I think at this point I'd like to just close the call and thank everyone for your continued interest in Aegon. Thank you.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. That concludes today's Aegon conference call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.